Director of Management and Entrepreneurship and an Associate Entrepreneur in Residence at the Cy Sims School of Business in Yeshiva University. In addition, Mr. Harari is the CEO of H3 Capital, a private equity company. Mr. Harari is also a senior lecturer for the OU, Eisha Torah, and NCSY. He is the founder and president of Movado Incorporated, an organization that develops innovative methods to teach spirituality in relevant and modern ways. He is a member of the executive board of the OU, as well as the founding chairman of its Young Leadership Cabinet. He is also a member of the Conference of Young Jewish Presidents. His videos, lectures, and radio show are watched and listened to worldwide and are shown in classrooms all around the world. His presentation will be I Have To versus I Want To, How to Excite Yourself and Your Children About Judaism. Mr. Charlie Harari.
Morning, everybody. Just move everything away. Sometimes my hands get a little crazy. I don't want to knock things over. Okay. Just turn everything off. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time on a Sunday afternoon to be here. It's truly an honor to be part of this conference. And the topic that I want to talk about today is a topic that I care very, very deeply about. Growing up and believing in Hashem and loving Hashem and loving our religion, we're seeing something that I don't think anybody is fully understanding and appreciating, even myself. We're seeing a world where our own people are just waking up and saying, no, thank you. I got it. No, I got it. No, thank you. No, I got it. No, thank you. And we're living in a world right now where it's amazing the changes that are taking place. There's never been, I don't think, in the history of our people, maybe during the times of when the Jews came back by Ezra and Nehemiah, where there's such kiruv. You go to conferences and there's 1,000 people in the room. I just had the opportunity to take 115 guys to Eretz Yisrael, men, adult men, half of which have never been there before, for the first time in a week. Right? It was amazing. You see guys that would never have dreamed of coming to Israel. Their whole life is like CNN Jew. Israeli soldiers are big bad wolves, and Orthodox Jews are crazy cavemen, and they're coming back, and they're breaking down. Where was I? The world of Kiruv is exploding. But at the same time, you're looking at maybe the greatest hemorrhaging of our internal community that we've ever experienced. I don't think we've ever had a time where we've seen so many kids come up through a system, 10, 12 years of education, 2 years in Israel, I'm out. Sitting here looking amazing. You see guys walking around, totally looking religious. I'm all in. You look at me on the street, and you're even threatened by my religion. We're even threatened by them. You think you're so religious, the way you dress? And inside, empty. Ortho-robots. Because what's happening is there's an entire world of I have to. And where unfortunately we have to be bigger and better, and why today is so important is what we're lacking sometimes is that I want to. I have to go to shul. I hope there's no tachanun. You know, that's I tell you this all the time. It's the greatest day for any man in the hundred. Right, what's the biggest yontif for any guy over the year? Anybody? Beis Nisan. Why? The first day you don't say Tachanun for a month. Go to any shul in North America. The Chazan can't even finish Chazor Shachat. It's like Osa Shalom Ramos Shalom Ramos over men. Before we even can turn a page to get Tachanun, it's Iskabli, Iskabli. It's like, what's going on? It's like a firing range because God forbid you'd even think there's Tachanun if there's no Tachanun. And the guy looks at him and goes, there a Chassim? No. Is there a Bris? No. Why is he saying it's Nisan? And all of a sudden, like, oh my, they start calculating May, June, July, August. Purim pales in comparison. Purim, you gotta bring Lena Megillah. Beis Nisan, you get off free. And if it's a Monday or a Thursday, oh, guys are doing conga lines with their tefillin at a shul, handing out candies to babies. The wife goes, what are you such a good move for? He goes, what are you such a good move for? There's no tachanun today. And it was Thursday. I mean, like, I don't got to say Greek for 5 less minutes and I don't feel guilty. I mean, is there a bigger yontif than that? Every guy knows what I'm talking about. When you get a mincha marav at 4:50, you know what I'm talking about? And you don't go to leave your house again, and it's 6 o'clock, it's like, oh my gosh. We live in a world sometimes where we're good Jews. But we have to do Judaism. We've made a deal with God. Here's the story. You don't mess with me, and I'll follow your rules. And we like sort of have a box where we all play in. And if we step out of that box, we're worried we're going to get zapped on the outside. I got a life, I got a career, I got a job, I got kids. We got a deal. We got a deal. I'm a religious Jew. I'm doing it. I'm saying the words. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm going through. I got more. I'll say this school. You got it. Just tell us to tell him. You got it. You got it. Chalas. I'll bake chalas. I'll put on red bendels. I'll go to the make. Whatever you want. Just do it. Parshas Aman. Parshas Aman. You name a school, I'm in. You give me what I need, right? I'm a religious Jew. And if there's a problem in my community, we got the back door. I don't know what I said. We said to tell him. Like, we know the back door. We don't like wait. We're Jews. We don't like waiting online. We know the back door. Back door is the creator of the universe. I have to. The generation, the fight that we have right now, that we're all grappling with within ourselves and within our children and within our grandchildren, is the world of I have to. Rav Moshe Weinberg, my Rebbe, once said an amazing Zohar. He said that the Zohar says that by the end of days, which clearly we are all living in, the souls of the Jewish people start to transform. Every single one of us has two parts to our soul. A part of us is a son, and a part of us is a slave. And when we come to the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Rosh Hashanah, we are metaking both parts of the soul. When we deal with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, when we say im ka'avadim, im kabanim, avinu malkeinu, are the two ways we interact with the Rabbonu Shalom, and our Rosh Hashanah is the time in which we interact with him in a way that fixes those parts of our souls. A slave, a servant, has one desire: to make the master happy. That's it. The master's happy, he's happy. A son could care less if the parents are happy. Anyone has kids, especially teenage kids, proof is point. That's it. I don't have to say anymore. Right. They're all nodding. Everyone with little kids are like, what do you mean? Well, everyone with teenagers is like, yeah. A son could care less if you're happy. You know what a son wants? He wants a relationship with the parents. The Zohar says he's mechapes beginza de malka. He plays around with the ginzas, like the room, the secret room of the Malka, of the Melech. He taunts his father. Because if his father is happy and fine, but doesn't pay attention to the kid's not happy. In our souls, every single one of us is peaceful, so just wants to make a Kodesh Baruch Hu happy. And the Zohar says, as it gets closer to the times of Mashiach, the soul starts, the servant starts to diminish within us, and the son starts to grow more. Because a servant, at the end of the day, you get a check, you go home. A son, you get a check, there's no check with your parents. You jump in front of the train for your parents. You die for your parents. And if you're going to bring Mashiach, if we're going to have a generation that is going to stand in front of the universe and bring the Rabbonu Shalom to the world, we can't have servants. They're not going to go the distance. We need kids. And as the generations, and a kid has chutzpah, which is why it says, as it gets closer, chutzpah increases. Because chutzpah means, I want more. And Ba'aniyas Daitiyo, we're standing right now, is at the threshold of the battle of the end of time. Where the generations are coming up and they're saying, I don't want to be a slave. I don't care if God's happy. God can take care of himself. I got to worry about my relationships. I got kids that don't accept me. I got to get into schools. These people don't think I'm part of their friends. Let God worry about God. I don't know why he wants to do stuff. It's his business. I'm not a slave anymore. I don't just put stuff on. There was a great generation we had. My grandfather was part of an amazing generation that we may never see again, of people that walk through gas chambers and then put on tefillin. If the kid doesn't have, if the Rebbe doesn't like do enough jumping jacks in the classroom, the kid's not putting on tefillin today. We've got Jews that literally lost 15 people of their family and they're still from. Today, if like mom and dad like didn't take the kid to Israel and there's no sushi at the bar mitzvah, the kid's like, well, I didn't have sushi at bar mitzvah, you expect me to be from? What's going on? It's because the slave, the servant in us, the holy servant is diminishing. And the kid is saying to us, either you explain it to me, either I get it, or I'm out. And by the way, I'm out and I can fake it for you. Don't worry. I'll pretend I'm in. I'll nod it through. Watch. I'll robot my life. I'm out. Why is this happening for? So I want to do a little bit today is explain what I believe is the science of Judaism, or at least this stuff, and then show how what's happening right now is actually something that's happening in our mind. And when we understand our mind and what's going on, we can understand the forces that are fighting us and the forces that can protect us. So let's begin. Because the battle right now is exactly contained to one game. There is one battleground when it comes to Yiddishkeit, and that is our mind. Judaism is a game that plays and shapes and fights for our mind. And if we understand how our mind works, and we understand the pitfalls that happen to our mind, we can understand how to maneuver around the problems and understand how to get to the core of how to get to a place where we are shifting our minds to enjoy and to love Yiddishkeit. So let's begin. And begin where science has taken us to. I give a class in Yeshiva University called Principles of Success. And the class basically is a combination of neuroscience and entrepreneurship. Because in order to understand how to be an entrepreneur, it's not whether or not you can figure out how to make a gadget. The guys invented ways, didn't just figure out ways. There's a mentality, there's a mindset that goes into being an entrepreneur. There's a mindset that goes into life. And the beginning of everything understanding the mind is understanding how the mind works. And up until the beginning of time, literally until about the 80s and the early 90s, the way we saw the mind was as a fixed tool. You get what you get, and you don't get upset. That's sort of how it is. Even today, there's a little bit of that that's still left off. And that's what we think, that like language comes at the end of life. When you get older, it gets harder. And some people were smarter, some people were less smart. And the way we see the world is basically, as you are born, you are given a certain mind, and then you can use the mind for how you would like to use the mind. And in the early, in the late 80s and early 90s, a type of science came to fruition called neuroplasticity. Some of you may have heard this before, especially if you're in your neuroscience. Tammy's laughing because I speak about this every single week on the radio show. Neuroplasticity. What neuroplasticity says as follows. Right? Anyone has ever had a friend that once was very heavy and lost weight? Right? Everyone has that one friend who's sort of married to the god of the gym. You know what I'm talking about? Where like he can like do like 700 push-ups with one hand while eating lettuce and like, you know, Sudoku puzzle. You know what I'm talking about? That guy. Right? And then you say you want to work out. So you go to the gym one day with this guy and you go, listen, it's not for me. You never had the feeling when you get to the gym for the first time, right? And you're like jogging on the treadmill, like, well, that's been 45 minutes. You look down, you're like 18 seconds. You ever had that feeling? You're like, time slows down in space and on treadmills. Where you're like, it's just not me. It's not me. I know. I got it. My body isn't built to like do push-ups and go on treadmills. What's the guy going to tell you? It's an excuse. Neither was my body. When I started doing this 8, 9, 10 months ago, I also couldn't do it. But what happens is our bodies are built in the most brilliant way by the Rabbanu Shalom. It's a complete meritocracy, our bodies, which means everyone has different proclivities. But at the end of the day, if you want to, you do it. And what happens is your body develops strength in the areas in which you work it out. So even if you had a muscle that was never touched before, it was completely weak, if you use that muscle again and again and again, the way your body works, which is brilliant, is it literally, the microfibers rip and grow back stronger. And you on your own could shift the way your body works to some extent. Your mind works the exact same way. Now, we couldn't see it beforehand because I can't see my mind. But what scientists have shown us is that the way it works, that your mind works in a way they call neuroplastic. Which means every time you have a thought, it's amazing, it forms within your brain a connection. Just thinking, which is sort of something that I can't touch, actually creates a physical connection in your brain. Like working it out. The more you have that thought, the stronger the connection gets. And again, and again, and again, till literally each and every one of us can reshape our mind by just thinking. The reason why I speak English, and when you give me a round object, I say ball, isn't because I was born with a proclivity towards English. And my friend of mine that comes from China has no idea what I'm talking about. It's because when I was a little boy, my mom held up a thing and said, ball. And I said, buh, buh, buh. And she goes, ball. And again, ball. And the minute she said ball once, there was a tiny little thing that came in my brain called object ball. It was a made up word, ball. That's an object. And it created a connection. And then again, and then again, and then again. And then I lived in America. And again, and again, and again, and again. And now if you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, what is this? I'm like, oh, okay, B, talk to the B, baby, hold on a second. I have my book in the back. Give me a minute, let me just put on the light. I'm like, ball, why? Because my brain has within it a connection that is so strong to that object. I've had that thought so many times that in my brain is a rock solid muscle between the word ball and the object. That's why we speak certain things. That's why we do certain things. That's why we act in certain ways. That's why we have certain habits. That's why sometimes if you're doing something, your brain makes a connection to food. That's, by the way, how people start brushing their teeth. This is a good little digression. How did people start brushing their teeth? You know the history of teeth brushing? This is great. When they first introduced toothpaste to the world, nobody got it. Right? The toothpaste manufacturers created a paste that was going to clean your mouth, but nobody took it because it tasted disgusting. And nobody can remember to brush their teeth. So they added something called the mint flavor. The mint flavor does nothing to your mouth. Mint is just a taste. But what it did was it created a connection in your brain from getting up in the morning and the mint taste. That's why today, in our generation, you get up, you have that taste in your mouth. Feeling minty doesn't help your teeth. But what it does is it created a neurological connection between a taste, which is something you can feel, and an action. You get up right now, you brush your teeth. A little kid, you forget. What does mom do? She says, brush your teeth, brush your teeth, brush your teeth, brush your teeth, brush your teeth. And over the course of your little, as a childhood, as you get older, what happens is you start in your brain to make a connection between waking up in the morning and mint. Brush my teeth. Our activity, if you look at your life right now, what you will find for the most part is the things that we do, the things that we say, what gets us upset, going to work, all the things that are happening to us are neurological connections that we put in place through our lives. The language that I speak, the things that I forgot. Now what happens is it's called synaptic pruning. If you don't have a thought, over course times, it actually gets rid of the thought. That's why when you were in 10th grade, you knew the periodic table, and now I have no idea what that thing is. If you tell me like what salt is, I'm like, I have no clue. But as a kid, because you remembered it, you made a connection the night before, a couple of times, it got a little strong, and then you haven't thought about it, and the connection sort of went away. So right now, if you look at your life, what you find in your mind is a lifetime of connections, a lifetime of thoughts, a lifetime, and it's more complex than this, but a lifetime of making neurological connections between different things, and the stronger the connection gets, the more it's normal. That's why you can daven sometimes and totally say the words quickly because you've been saying it forever, but a Baal Tshuva sometimes walks in and has a very hard time with the same language. He's not less smart than us. It's just how many times have I done something? This, by the way, is the reason why Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that it's easier to learn Shas than to fix a habit. Because Shas is the inclusion, the addition of information. A habit, you have to actually go back into your neurological connections and shift it. That's really hard. Going back into the way you see the world and shifting it is hard. Walking into a room and not being threatened by someone that you've been threatened by for the past 5 years, doing something that you haven't done before when you've already created a habit to it, is so much more difficult than adding information. But that's how we work. Now watch what happens when you understand this. This explains habits. That's why certain things are habits for us. Now here's how it connects. Stay with me. We have conscious power. It's attention. There's a great psychologist named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He created a book. He wrote a book called Flow. I don't know if you read Flow before. It's so kedai. Flow. The science of optimal experience. This guy, if I didn't know better, he'd be a gadol hador. I read the book. I read it on my Kindle. I bought the hard copy just so that I could underline. I'm at the law school. Underline and highlight the whole book. The whole book is yellow. It's godless. Godless. If I didn't know better, I would think it's a Muslim book. He talks about how our society is crumbling and happiness and enjoyment. Godless. Flow. Afterwards, if you don't remember, I'll give you the information. If you want to email me, I'll send you the link to the Amazon. It's worth the read. And he explains something so brilliant, which he doesn't know this, but we can tie right into our Yiddishkeit. He explains the following. Every one of us has a certain amount of psychic power. I don't mean like you can read someone's mind. I mean like you have energy that you use when you think something. Your mind has a certain amount of attention. That's how you go through life. Right now, you have attention. Hopefully, you're listening to what I'm saying. I have attention. I'm trying to say the certain words. When I go outside, my attention is being geared towards traffic or kids or whatever it is. We have a certain amount of attention. What happens is, if you do something enough times, it forms a habit. Now, you need less attention to deal with the habit because your brain knows how to do it on its own. So as you do something enough times, the attention starts to diminish because you don't need it as much. Right? That's why if you go to Israel for a week, you feel like it's a month. You ever have this feeling, by the way? You're sitting, if you go to like someplace for like, and you feel like camp. The first week of camp feels like a month. Why is the first week at camp feels like a month, but when you go back home it doesn't feel like a month? Simple. Because since it's all new, you're using all of your mental attention to figure it out, and it's exhausting. So your mind is saying, oh my God, it feels like it's long. But when you come home, most of your life is the same, and you don't need the same attention. That's why as people get older, they say time flies more. Time's not flying more. It's that my life is much more routined as I get older, so I don't feel like I'm using the same conscious attention. So the more I do something, the less attention I need. So then what do I have? It's called boredom. If I'm not using my conscious attention, I'm not doing it. I don't feel like I'm exhausting anything. I don't feel like I'm doing anything. It's just habiting by its own. So habits are amazing because they can condition ourselves to do great things like brush our teeth. But they're dangerous because they can make life boring. I can fly through life. You ever have this feeling, by the way, where you start Shemona Esrei and then you're done and you don't know what happened? You ever have that? You're like, where did I go? I'm like, am I up to Modim? Like, I Modim. Did I even say Shema? You ever have that? You're like, am I even up? Like, am I dreaming? Like, you don't even remember your day. You ever had this feeling when you're at work? You're like, how did I get here? You know what I'm saying? Like, and sometimes you don't even think, you have no idea. How is that humanly possible? The answer is, your brain tells your brain, here, I got it. Like, you know, I got it. I know how to go from here. Enjoy. Take the night off. And now you just go off in space and you're imagining things. And your brain's been there so many times and it sort of takes you to the job, parks the car, gets to the thing. You're going through work. You have no idea what's going on. The challenge of habit is that it sucks out the greatness. It sucks. It's boring. It's automatic. It's robotic. Now watch. Stay with me for this next piece. Watch what he says, because he's brilliant. He says there's two types of experiences in the world. What's called autotelic and exotelic. Exotelic is from, exo is from the Latin word outside, like exterior. Telic is Latin for goal. There are some things we do that the only reason why we do them is for an exterior goal. I go to work, I don't love my job, but I need a paycheck. So the work that I do during the day has no intrinsic value to me. The value is that it is outside me. Exotelic. Other things are autotelic. Auto is from the Latin word self, like an autobiography. Autotelic is, it's intrinsically important to me. I play with my children because the act of actually sitting, and sometimes it's even harder for parents because it happens so frequently. Grandparents get it, but they get it a generation too late. I'm sitting with my grandchildren and just being with my, even if I'm babysitting, that's why parents can't babysit their own kids. They're getting babysitters, but a grandparent can't babysit because I'm getting it now after I let my kids grow older. It wasn't getting them somewhere. It was being with them that's important. Just the act itself has intrinsic value. Now stay with me. Life is about figuring out exotelic and autotelic. What are the things I do in my life that I'm doing them for a reason? And what are things that are intrinsically rewarding? And if our life is being filled with things that are exotelic, we become bored and we start to look for things that make us excited. He didn't say this, but I'm adding our Jewish piece. He says it without coming up with a source, because he doesn't have this piece. He didn't get this part of his education. He says that everyone is built with a desire for conscious expansion. Everybody wants more. He doesn't realize that it comes from the fact that we have a soul. We are built with soul. The brain is a muscle, just like my arms and my abs. Who I am is my soul. And God put us on this earth for one reason: to expand my soul, to become great. I was given a resource that is literally a piece of the divine. I'm not going to be happy with some food. I'm part of the divine. The creator of humanity isn't something outside me. He is within me. So I have something that is inside all of my body saying, more, 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 more. You got to give me more. I got to be moved. I got to be stimulated. I got to grow. I'm a soul, for God's sake. Do you think I'm going to be happy with the same size house? You think I'm going to be happy with the same size anything in this world? Nothing's going to make me happy, because until you allow me to expand, I'm never going to be happy. That's why nothing that we get in the world makes us happy after we get it. The brand new kitchen is good for the week or the month or the year until it's got to be bigger. Everything. That's why they keep on changing. That's why every single gen. That's why you never have, like, you know, like the fashion people saying, like, ladies, you look great. We're making the whole thing up. Last year's style was just fine. Like, you know, enjoy. Happy holidays from all of us in Venice. Ever. I got to keep on changing it on you because I got to keep on changing. It's the check because my soul is dying for expansion. So when you live in a world where everything that we're doing is exotelic, we're constantly chasing something we can never get. Because there's nothing that I do today that's worth anything. I'm working for money. I'm raising my kids so they become from, where they become smart, or they get money. I'm doing things for something else, but I'm never getting that something else because it's never hitting it. That's why people do drugs or watch entertainment. It's because I gotta feed my need for more. So I feel like nothing, but all of a sudden I see a guy standing in front of 50,000 people and he's about to throw a football. That's something. It's something. I mean, I can. There's everything that I need in my life. There's winning. There's losing. I'm sweating. I'm watching a game. I don't even know the players before I even watched the game. Now I'm sweating. I'm watching a movie about someone who dies and jumps off a cliff. And what am I doing this for? Because it's feeding me. I need to feel like I'm expanding my consciousness. I got it. I can't do it myself. I'll get it through you. When our life is exotelic, when nothing that we do during our week is worth what we're doing, we're constantly looking for more. And if you need proof, go drive around Hollywood. Everything in the world, more. Everything in the world, more. Everything in the world, drugs. Drugs. Why would anyone in Hollywood ever want to get rid of their reality? They have the best reality. Because they're not looking for reality, they're looking for expansion. And when you have the biggest house on the block, you can't expand anymore physically, so you got to take me through drugs. And the essence of our life is being able to go from exotelic to autotelic. To say, I've habituated myself around what I'm doing, so now I'm free consciously. You know what I'm going to do next? I'm going to deepen my knowledge of what I'm doing. And in the freedom that I have consciously to do the one thing, I'm going to figure out how to be better and better and better. I'm going to become an expert at what I am doing because I've already done it a couple times. I don't got to figure my way around the block. Right? I'll never forget, I was watching a Super Bowl when I was a kid by a friend of mine whose father's like a big veer. So he had a huge Super Bowl party. I'll never forget this. I'm on the couch with two different guys. We're sitting around. One guy never played sports in his life. One guy was a Division II coach. He was godless. One guy's like, so how does it work again? Like, why are all the guys hitting each other for? And you're like, well, yeah, no, it's called the football, and there's a line, and he just can't get it. And he's getting it, and he's using all of his conscious attention to get the game. It's like I was a D2 coach. He was holding in strategies. He was, like, talking about defenses. Like, watch, they're going to bring up the left tackle. And he was, like, living in a different reality. He was watching the game at a depth that this guy couldn't even dream of. Why? So now we know. Because as soon as this Division II coach got the game enough times, it became so strong mentally that he was free consciously to go deeper on it, and deeper on it, and deeper on it, and deeper on it, until he saw the same game in such different form. He expanded his consciousness in a depth and not in a breadth. He was able to enjoy the nuance because he already knew the basics. The fact that his brain had strong neuroplasticity to the basic rules freed him up to go deeper into the beauty of the nuance of the game, and that gave him the feeling of expansion. That's how life works. You'll be bored at your job until you realize that your job, you can go deeper on your job. You can figure out how to do it better. You can figure the nuance of parenting and life. The deeper we get into life, the more we enjoy what we do, we get better at it. We don't need to run away. The whole concept of TGIF is the biggest joke. Thank God it's Friday means Monday to Friday was nothing. Can you imagine 5 days, five-sevenths of one's life being worthless? Thank God I can escape my life and do what? Live my life differently than I'm living it already? Okay, some people have to work, fine. But as a thank God it's Friday? That means I've given up. Now, how does this work with Yiddishkeit? In the 1 minute I have left. By the way, thank you very much. You've been great. No, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about Judaism. We're living in a world where, unfortunately, our Judaism has become exotelic. I have no intrinsic value for what I do. Here's why I do it. Because my community says do it, or because I'm spiritually connected to God and we're doing spiritual shopping. As a little kid, that's how we raise our kids. And it's fine. The system is called Na'aseh V'Nishma. Na'aseh is exotelic. Do it, because you do it, because you do it, because you do it, because you do it. Nishma is, you get it. It's intrinsically valuable. When we grow up as little kids, and we say, why do I do? What am I going to tell my five-year-old? And explain to him Yiddishkeit? Because you do it. Why do you put on tzitzis? Because you put on tzitzis. What are you going to tell a nine-year-old kid that asks you, Daddy, where is Hashem? You go to the good old philosopher Uncle Maishi and say, here, there, and everywhere. And the kid goes, that makes sense. And we go on with our day. Most of how we got introduced to Judaism is a place where the explanations of why we do what we do either is because everybody does it, community, or because Hashem's going to need it from you, and if you don't do it, there's a problem. Tzchar and onesh. That's how we raise our children, because that's what a kid can get. Your kids in your class wear tzitzis. Do you want to wear tzitzis? Or, if you don't do this, this is going to happen to you. And it has become almost the norm in education as we get older. We're inspired by stories or where somebody didn't talk Lashon Hara and then found $1 million. We are worried in stories where somebody didn't show up for Ne'ilah and then died in February. He didn't die in February. You know when he died? By Ne'ilah. Mess with God, you get it. Hook him up, you get it. It's called spiritual shopping. I need stuff, you need stuff. And I got Tzchar V'Onesh. You know what the problem with Tzchar V'Onesh is? We don't have a checkout counter. We don't have like shipping 2 days, shipping 5 days. It's complex. Sometimes Tzchar doesn't come for generations. There is Tzchar V'Onesh, but you know who doesn't know about it? Me. I don't have the FedEx guy. Doesn't work for me. So when God sends Tzchar V'Onesh down, it can happen in ways that I have no idea how it works. So yes, it may happen in the way I want it, or it may not. But if the reason why I'm doing Judaism is because I'm scared God's going to zap me, and then all of a sudden he doesn't zap me, and the guy next to me who does something wrong doesn't get zapped either, I'm like, whoa, wait a second. There's no intrinsic value in this. It's exotelic. I'm only doing this not to mess up with the creator of the universe. And guess what? It's working for so-and-so. Look at that rabbi. He seems like a really good guy. He doesn't have the perfect life. If there's no intrinsic value, and you take out the reason for the cause, I've got nothing left. Why are we from? I know how many times I speak to mothers on the phone who cry to me that their kids aren't from. I can't even count. And I go, why do you want your kid to be from for? 9 out of 10 times. You know what it's going to be like on my Pesach Seder when he comes into the house? All his whole brothers and sisters are from. You know what it's like for my sister who got a daughter who wants a shidduch? And what's going to be with this and what's going to be with that? I expected my kids to be from. My father. It's communal. I never heard once. Maybe 10%. Because he's the Kadosh Baruch Hu's child, and this is the best thing in the world for him. How could he live his life without tapping into the greatest wisdom in the world? It's going to mess up my Pesach Seder. It's going to be embarrassing. God's going to zap him. Socially or spiritual shopping? Why do we do what we do? I mean, look at our own Judaism. If you could take your own Judaism and put it on a pedestal and ask why you do what you do, chances are, because somehow in our society, whatever we consider our community, these people are a little bit too religious. Can you calm down a drop? He's taking it too seriously. Relax. You don't got to do that. I'm going to wear that. Relax. These people are not even Jewish at all. Can you step up just a drop? Because you're barely Jewish, but thank God you have me as a tzaddik to welcome you into the faith. My group does this. It's working for us. And I got it. I wear my hair this way. I go to this much shir. I got my Judaism is socially protected. And if I question why I wear certain things or don't wear certain things or do things or don't do things, there are spigots of, but the truth is, if I would have to break it down, it's because I have a deal. I got kids, you know. Or I don't want to step out of my zone. And what drives some of us, and by the way, all of us in some form, is the community or is the relationship. But guess what's happening? It's gone. Most people here grew up in a community. Your kids don't grow up in a community. You know where the community exists? Online. When I grew up to hang out with my buddies, I had to walk and knock on someone's house on Shabbos afternoon. You know where my community was? In my school, and then my college, and then when I went to Hask, and then when I hung out with. You know, it was a community of my kids and their, you know what their friends are? They can make communities in a minute with a cell phone. My community was geographic. Their community's not geographic. They can have just as much fun talking to people all over the country. Their community is different. If I don't like my Rebbe in the morning, you know what happened? I sucked it up. They don't like their Rebbe at night. You can Google, I hate my Rebbe Facebook group. By that night, you get 30 guys that hate Rebbe. You got a new community. You got new guys. I don't believe in God because I'm having a tough day. Guess what? When I didn't believe in God because I was having a tough day, I sucked it up and I didn't believe in God. I spoke to a friend of mine, we kvetched a little bit and moved on with my life. You know what's happening now? They're Googling, is there a God in the world? And you've got groups of people that are spewing this no God nonsense. These like two-bit philosophers that are like quoting a little bit of Kant and Descartes and putting it together and pretending like they're like atheists because Richard Dawkins said that there was evolution once. That's it. They have a Rebbe and they've got Hasidim. And that's it. They got a community. Community's changing. If we think where kids are going to be from because of community, we're in the wrong generation. No one's worried about getting Chirim. Chirim now sells books. No one's worried about that stuff anymore. You think a kid cares about whether or not you like him or not? He's got plenty of friends all over the world. He'll be fine. He lives on a screen. Community doesn't work. And guess what? If we think we're getting him because we're scared of Schar V'Onesh, do me a favor. There's enough guys living real pretty, real pretty, snubbing God in the face. Richard Dawkins isn't getting struck by lightning. I think there's half the other guys walking around destroying God. And so our kids are coming up going, there is no intrinsic value in this stuff. I've been doing this. My family's been doing this. Truthfully, they have no idea why they light Shabbos candles. My mom has no idea why she dresses the way she dresses. She does it because, you know, kvod bas melech panima. It's a great line. She has no idea what that means. I don't know. Beyonce's more of a Malka than my Rebbitzin, that's for sure. She looks much prettier. Why is my father going to shul? I don't know. Because if he doesn't, he's scared. I don't know. He doesn't want to be. He definitely doesn't be there. I see the way he... They don't really buy it. It's exotelic. And if it's exotelic, and now we've lost our conditions, I got nothing left. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what they want. And I'm being a little, by the way, I'm being hyperbolic here a little bit. You know what I'm saying? It's not that bad. I'm just trying to prove a point. I'm going to nod through it. I'll nod through it. I'll come home. I'll nod through it. You want me to dress black and white? You got it. You want me to make sure I bring the Omicron home? It's fine. You want me to go to yeshiva? I'll nod through it. I'll give you the social change. It's okay. Yeah, community, you got it. Community, you got it. But in my heart, I don't believe there's anything intrinsic about this religion. In my heart, I have no idea why I do what I do. I have no clue. In my heart, this could be all made up. I don't know. I don't want to say it out loud because I heard a shir once that I get zapped, so let me stay in my heart. In my heart, I think a lot of this stuff is some rabbis a long time ago not getting with the program. All right, it is what it is. I have lost the sense of the autotelos that has shifted the way I see it. And as a result, the consciousness that I can use to deepen my understanding in our religion is now gone. Since I can do religion very quickly because I've been doing it since I was a kid, I can do it like a robot. I could do it so well that I can pretty much be absent consciously for most of it, go through my Judaism, and then have more fun when I watch the Knick game. All that extra conscious space that I could be using to deepen myself, to understand the depths of my religion, I don't need it because nothing really there. And now the habit, the brilliance of Judaism, and I'll conclude, I know people are, all right, one, two more minutes and then I'm done. The brilliance of Judaism is that it allows us to habituate ourselves around spirituality. Judaism is the religion of spirituality. Judaism is the one religion that brings to the world the concept that there is a spirit within the physical. When the Greeks were taking babies after they gave birth to them and throwing them in the pits because they didn't like the way they looked, one nation said, you can't do this. And why? They said, because in that baby is a spirit. They go, no, it's not. It's my baby. And the Jew stood up and said, in the baby is a soul. That was a chiddush. When the Romans in the afternoon, all they did in the afternoon by the Roman Colosseum was take a bear who hasn't eaten and take a slave that they just picked up and pit them against each other. Philo, the Jew, according to De Cassius, said, you can't kill the guy. And they go, why not? It's my slave. They go, no, no, no. The property isn't yours because within the body is the soul. Right now, all of science, if you ever read Einstein and the theology, all of science comes from the theory that there's immutable laws. Why would there be an immutable law? Because there must be a lawmaker called the creator. We brought the world of spirituality from within. The way you find spirituality is when you habituate yourself to doing certain things, you're now free to deepen yourself. You can expand your consciousness by saying, I've done this already. I know how to say Shemoneh Esrei pretty much by heart. What does it mean? I know this. What does that mean? The beauty of our minds that you can habituate yourself towards the practice, which frees you up to understand the meaning. Because the Nasa leads to the Nishma. You can't know how to be married until you're married. So by doing the activity enough time, you're now able, you're consciously free to now understand the beauty of it, to make it autotelic, to look at it and go, every single thing that I do is awesome. But if nobody's telling me that it's intrinsically valuable, why would I waste my time with it? I'll save my extra conscious attention and then run away from it. I'll roboticize my life. It'll be fine. I'll do it. I'll habituate myself. I can do the whole thing on half mode. And then I can spend my time expanding my consciousness, having fun. Because we don't believe that there's any intrinsic value outside whether or not we're going to get a gift from God or a punishment, or my community is going to think that I'm a good or bad Jew. And our kids see it. And they're out the door. They're out. They're done. They're not sticking around for this nonsense. So how do we do it? So there's only one way. Is we deepen it within ourselves. Our biggest challenge as a parent is blaming educational institutions. Leave them alone. It is hard enough to run a school and educate a million kids with no money, and half the kids are going out of their minds. And today, unfortunately, there's so many special needs. Forget the schools. Their job was never to give them the beauty of Yiddishkeit. It was a bidi eved because we have to go to work. They should teach the kids how to be Jewish. If they can teach the kids how to be Jewish without ruining them, it's a big, huge win. If my kid can go through a system and learn how to be a Jew and not have to hate anything, thank you, here's my money, as much as I can give you, and everything in the world, Ganesh Shine. Thank you, it's been a pleasure. Pesach Seder was not in school. Amuna is not for the teachers. It's for us. We know our kids. We know their language. We know how they work. And we've got one job. To show them that everything that goes on is intrinsically valuable. If I go through my day and not know what I'm doing, I'm not going to expect my kid to love this stuff. If I go to school, if I go to shul for 20 years and I'm still pumped for a no tachnun, what do I expect my kids to like tachnun? If I don't know why I wear certain clothes because like someone told me once and I don't get God upset, if it's a uniform and I have no idea that the meaning of tznias, I'm going to make my daughter wear. My job is to teach my kids nasa. You do it because you do it because you do it. You start off in our religion and you do it because that's what we do. And as parents, if we want our kids to love Judaism, we got to figure out why we do what we do. We pick the things in our lives and go, why do I do this for? And we push and we question and we ask and we find. Will we find the essence of meanings? Of course not. The Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world, he's smarter than us. But we'll find time. We'll find beauty. We'll see the brilliance of a system that has modesty as a principle and what that means. We'll see what fire does to it and what it means, where it comes from and why it's not. We'll see why I say if we're not willing to spend the time to love this religion, we can't pass over the intrinsic value to our kids. And so in conclusion, the game, the battle, is exo to autotelic. From doing things for an outside benefit to doing things for the intrinsic benefit. Our minds have the ability to deepen. And the real challenge is whether or not we're really serious about this. Where we know our kids and we know ourselves. And in every one thing that we do, we understand the intrinsic value of it, one thing. We pass on that intrinsic value and the kids let's say, wow, this makes sense. I never thought of it that way. That's cool. That's counterculture. And we just do a few of those, we're done. Because as soon as the kids realize that a couple of these things make sense, they go, then the whole thing must make sense. Let me end with the following two quotes, and then I'm done. I'm sorry for taking so long. The Sefer HaChinuch says, we must explain to our teenage students the reasons and benefits of living a life of Torah and mitzvahs. Otherwise, they'll throw their Yiddishkeit away. Listen to Rav Moshe Shapiro. Just tell them with this. Rav Moshe Shapiro was asked why kids go off the derech. Here's what he said. Rav Moshe Shapiro, you're totally right. Go back. He says, "Hamotzi mechaver alav haraya." There's a famous principle that if you want to take from somebody, it's on your cheshbon. You have to prove it. You want the kid to give up that? You really want them to give up what's going on out there? Prove it. Prove it. They don't just get it. It's not because they were born into it, like we expect it from them. Let me tell you something. I'm not that old. Even when I grew up, it wasn't as good as it is out there today. It is really, really, really tempting out there. The kids are telling me stuff that I couldn't even believe. We want them to adopt this lifestyle, then we better prove it. And it is my bracha to all of us that we spend our time in finding the intrinsic value. We realize that the habits that we have is the greatest gift that God gives us. And by finding the habits and understanding the value intrinsically in what we do, we're allowed to become better and stronger Jews, but more importantly, pass that on to our children so that they see the intrinsic beauty of our Yiddishkeit. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful day.